You ready?
Yeah.
You ready? All right, hold on. Here we go.
Welcome to the My Aggie Nation podcast. In this week's episode, we're going to go back over to Bluebell Park and talk with freshman sensation, Braden Shoemake, second baseman over there for the Texas Aggies. We'll also talk a little bit of Texas A&M baseball as that season has gotten underway, and so much more today on the My Aggie Nation podcast. But before we get started, we got to bring in that guy all the way over there. It's President Zachary Taylor.
God bless America. God bless you, and God bless America, and God bless Aggie baseball, for that matter. Getting the win last night.
God bless sleep last night after Aggie baseball.
Yeah, that was a long, long game, which we've grown accustomed to that with Aggie baseball.
A little bit.
They typically tend to drag out a little bit, especially when you're scoring 19 runs a game. Last night, obviously, that was not the case, but...
But there was still about 5 pitching changes. And a video review.
A lot more than that.
Well,
yeah,
for,
about
per
a five,
team.
A five minute
3 second
video review. And also you had coaches arguing. Childers came out a couple of different times to talk with the umpires over things, and then they had to meet and discuss. And also you had SFA was doing a lot of the pitching changes in the middle of the inning.
Sure.
A&M did a couple, but SFA did a bunch. And so, yeah, you end up with what you had last night, which was in, well, not to the wee hours of the morning, but a really, really late ball game that maybe a little fatigue played in that intentional walk, wild pitch, walk-off win.
Sure, sure. Well, to set it up, if you did not watch the game last night, A&M, let's see, they got a runner on first on a single from Shoemake.
Yes.
And then there was also weirdness in that inning because you had a interference call when Shoemake was trying to steal second on Walker Pennington.
And see, that just kind of added to the rest of everything that was going on that night because it just seemed like every time one of the teams looked like they were about to score, they might break it open, something crazy happened. And
sure.
Yeah, the interference with Walker Pennington was, at the time, looked very, very costly. Because you go from a man in scoring position with no outs to suddenly one out and the man has to stay on first base. And so Childress came out and argued about that for a little bit, but
it's
to
pretty,
no avail.
Pretty fired up about that one.
Yeah.
Then you had Joel Davis step up and rope a single that moved Shoemake from first to third. And then up came, who was it, Bedford. Catcher.
Yes, Cole Bedford.
Cole Bedford. And they decided that they're going to put Cole Bedford on with a four-pitch intentional walk. And the first pitch, I believe, was in the dirt, kind of blocked by their catcher. The second pitch was also in the dirt, but kind of got away from the catcher, which allowed Shoemake was already at third. Joel Davis to go to second.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. So
and then the very next pitch, he airmailed it over the catcher's head, and Shoemake was able to score from third, the game winning run. The most interesting point of all of that is that Texas A&M won on a wild pitch on a intentional walk, a 4-pitch intentional walk, the day that Major League Baseball decided that they are going to get rid of those 4 pitches. To issue an intentional walk, you could just kind of point over to the base now and say, hey, you go over there.
And there's been a lot of times when an intentional walk has not gone the way that you wanted it
sure.
to. For a lot of pitchers, you know, because the catcher technically is not going to be waiting for the ball, so to throw with basically nobody there, at least whenever you start, is so difficult for some guys. And it's something that they have to work on. Rob Childers talked about that's we practice that all the time. And sometimes it goes a little crazy, and that's what happened last night. You've seen it in the major leagues. You've also seen times where you're trying to intentionally walk a guy, and the pitcher just kind of lobs it up there, and the batter staying in the batter's box is able to lean over and rope a base hit out of it.
Right.
So, yeah, it's we talked about that as far as what it might take away from the ball game or not. A lot of folks can make the argument that, well, it really doesn't make any difference. But last night showed that, at least in the collegiate level, it does.
Sure.
And I think you've seen plenty of that in the majors, too.
Sure, exactly. So, that was quite the ending to that game. I'm sure we'll get much more into that when we talk to Shoemake himself here later in the podcast. But Texas A&M baseball off to a pretty darn good start to the season. I mean, they absolutely destroyed Bowling Green in the first season. Poor Bowling Green, man.
Yeah. We could have played for Bowling Green.
Bowling Green
was bad.
Was not a quality.
Averaging what, like 6 errors a game, something like that. Their poor second baseman got ate up all weekend long.
Right. I might be speaking out of turn here a little bit because I don't really know what's been going on up there. But I know with a lot of those, with teams much more up north, maybe than Northern Kentucky, this time of year, there's still a lot of snow on the ground. It's hard to get out onto a baseball field and see live pop-ups, ground balls. A lot of those programs up until a couple weeks into the season are just doing all of their practicing inside what, like a football indoor practice facility. And it's hard to go in there and get actual ground balls and actual pop flies and live game situations.
You were really on a roll, and then Johnny Cash just threw you off. He does everybody. It's okay.
Right, right.
Yeah, but you can use that same excuse, because we actually talked about that, because you were telling me about that, or you were trying to make that argument up in the press box, and then I say, but Kentucky and Louisville are good pretty much every single year. So that's part of the problem. Is that I just don't think Bowling Green was very good. By the way, they committed 4 errors in the first game, 2 in the second, and 6 in the third.
Sure.
It was bad.
I agree. I just don't think that maybe not, they were necessarily the most quality of opponents.
No,
but,
none of them were.
But yeah, so I think A&M did prove, though, a little bit that for all the question marks that they had, especially in the batting order, with how many I believe they lost 6 of their 9 best hitters last year.
Yeah, they lost a lot.
They have shown that they can rise to the occasion.
And the crazy thing too is that the freshmen are the guys that are really standing out so far.
Right, right.
Braden Shoemake hitting in the 3-hole. Jorge Gutierrez.
Jorge Gutierrez has been a real interesting story because he wasn't in the starting lineup the first game. He was the guy that pinch hit at the end of the first game because the game was so out of hand, and walked in his first plate appearance on Friday night, came in, pinch hit again on game 2 on Saturday, and dropped 2 bombs after the game was already out of hand, and hit his way into the starting lineup for the second game on Saturday, where he hit a single, a triple, and finally got an out in his, like, 5th plate appearance.
And that's a guy who had 2 home runs his entire senior year of high school.
Sure,
sure. So this time last year, he only had 2 homers. He's already got 3 as a collegiate player and 7 at-bats.
Sure, and last night got another one.
From the right side of the plate.
Tying, right, switch hitter, game-tying hit off the scoreboard. So he's going to be someone exciting to watch and see if he said he didn't have that great of a fall. You know, they're out there, they have fall practice out there, and can get ready for the season. He's a guy who struggled a little bit during fall practice, kind of had to put his nose to the grindstone a little bit, and when he came back in the spring, seemingly seemed to say dropped some weight and worked on his hitting, and now is just, I mean, dropping bombs. And what were you gonna say?
Well, there were a couple of things that I took issue with. I mean, if you want to continue about Jorge, that's fine.
Yeah, one more point. I mean, it's interesting too with Jorge. Last night that he had to get lifted for a pinch runner in the 9th when it looked like they were trying to put it away, and then they went a couple more innings that he would have had a couple more at bats with how hot he's been. He was off the out of the lineup.
Yeah, and he was batting 9th last night too.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever he came out, yeah, I actually meant to ask him about that post game, but I didn't end up getting the question in. But you kind of were wondering, hey, you all of a sudden you got taken out for a pinch runner, and that's part of the problem with that, or it's kind of the double-edged sword, is that you've got a fast guy out there. If he scores, that's great, and you win. If he doesn't, then you're going to end up losing that bat if it ends up coming back around the lineup, which it did. Couple of things from last night that I saw that Texas A&M, it still bugs me a little bit when you're looking at this ball club.
Mm-hmm.
As offensively, their offensive prowess, as great as they are offensively and at the plate, they continue continue. And this isn't just this year. This has been a recurring factor season after season. They continue to struggle laying down a bunt. Nick Chorby did lay down a good sacrifice. I believe it was in the 10th or 11th. It was in the extra innings. And he laid down a good sacrifice. But before that, he had popped one up in a foul territory that got caught.
Yes.
If I can remember right. And there's been a couple of instances. Several, actually, or a few, where A&M just has not been able to lay down a bunt. And you sit there kind of scratching your head thinking, well, this is such a great offensive team. You got these guys that can swing the stick so well. Maybe they don't plan on playing small ball. Or maybe they do. They're just not executing.
I think eventually that they're certainly going to have to.
You saw Bowling Green and SFA, I think both. They had guys up there that the first thing they did, called for a sack bunt, first pitch, laid it right down the third baseline.
Sure. But if I remember, you would know this better than me, but if I remember right, last year, A&M wasn't necessarily that much of a small ball team. They haven't been. That hasn't really been their M.O.
Well, no, but you do have to be able to execute that at the right time.
Sure.
And they continue to struggle with it. And another thing, too.
But do you, though? Because I think that that with the way that a lot of these college teams hit the ball, if I remember right, just as a frame of reference, last year, going into the Super Regional, I think TCU had only attempted like 7 bunts the entire season. Sack is hitting for, but basically, if you have a strong hitting team, I think a lot of college coaches now are veering away from traditional small ball techniques.
Well, yeah, but you got to be able to, all facets of the game, you have to be clicking. And you also wonder how often TCU won, how often they attempted it, and two, how often they were successful. I'm not saying you have to play small ball all the time, but whenever the time calls for it, you have to be able to do it. And if A&M is unable to do those little things, they pretty much have the other little things covered. I mean, defensively, they've been very good so far. Offensively, as I said, they've been very good. Pitching-wise, been pretty solid. But if you're not able to do, you know, lay down a sacrifice bunt when you're called on, especially these speedy guys at the top of the lineup, it's just not going to work out for you.
Sure, and that comes with a lot of that comes with just inexperience with how many freshmen and how many first-time starters are in the lineup.
Again, I mentioned Chorby. I mean, he's a senior. It's a guy that should be able to lay down a bunt with his eyes closed, is what I'm saying. Also, Corbin Martin was able to wiggle his way out of trouble last night, but in the two times that he has pitched, I don't remember. Did he pitch in the early game on Saturday?
He pitched in the late
game. Yeah, that's. I knew he pitched in the late game because I was there for that. The early game, I was at basketball.
The late game was his first time out on the mound this season.
So he has gotten hit pretty hard this year so far.
Sure.
And it's a little Ryan Hendricks-esque. And again, I know it's the first weekend and the first midweek game. I realize that. And there's a lot left to be played, but you wonder, is this going to be a recurring factor with him? Because the guy, his arm looks great. He's throwing the ball hard, but he's getting hit hard both times, and he gave up a couple of runs the other night. I think last night was probably a good confidence booster for him. Getting the 2 Ks with the bases loaded was huge. And then also the next inning that he pinched, but again, like I said, the ball's been left out over the plate. And at this level, guys can hit 96 to 98 miles an hour if they know it's coming.
I mean, last night was it the ninth or the tenth that they should have taken the lead, because they if it wasn't for a fabulous diving catch by Chorby, out in center field, that he had back to back doubles hit off of him. What would have been back to back doubles hit off of him? That would have been the game, the go ahead run.
Yeah, whenever the bases got loaded. So, that would have been the case. Also, pitchers struggled with a little bit of control last night too. I think when Chafin came in, was walking quite a few guys and hit a batter. Now, he might have been a little tired from over the weekend. I know he pitched a little bit over the weekend series, but as far as his accuracy goes, it was kind of up and down for a couple of guys. Now, that being said, there were plenty of guys, Landon Miner being one, Mason Cole being another. Those guys came in, I mean, they pitched almost almost lights out.
Sure.
And they, Kaysen Sherrod, I forgot about Kaysen too. Kaysen Sherrod was pitching great as well. And so it's one of those deals where you got some guys who are feeling it that night and other guys who aren't. But again, if you go 12 innings, you're going to be seeing a lot of arms.
Flinging microphones everywhere.
Yeah, right? No. Well, I put my feet up because I wanted people to feel comfortable. Like, this is a laid-back, relaxed place.
They can't just look at us and figure that out.
We're just kind of just hanging out. You're wearing your polo today. So
I am wearing it. Maybe, I think, you know, I've been watching Mad Men lately. Mad Men? Maybe,
so you're
maybe we should do the podcast just in full tailored suit with a little pocket square and a skinny tie.
Come in 11 a.m. and noon is cocktail hour and
yeah,
lunch.
Yeah, I think that's how we should run the podcast.
Drink the rest of the day away. It would make it entertaining.
Yeah,
that's for
dang
sure.
I think that's how we should do it. But, you know, A&M, I think the thing with the pitchers, I think this early in the season, when you have replaced that many pitchers on the team, they replaced a lot of pitchers on that team. I think that there's a ton of guys that not only do the players not know what their role is, but the coaches don't necessarily know what their role is. And pitchers, a huge chunk of the pitching game, a huge chunk of baseball is the mental game and being prepared mentally before you get out there. I think you'll see the pitching improve as the season goes on and some of these new guys fit into what their roles will be.
Well, I'm not really worried about the pitching. That's something that Rob Childress is always going to be able to straighten out. And just FYI, I know this is only your second year of Childress ball. The lineup and the pitching rotation will look nothing like this.
Sure.
Come tournament time. I mean, sure. it'll have swapped around.
Is it Austin Homan and
George Yancha was the starter at short last year. So I can expect that there will be a lot of moving parts. It generally is. And with the pitching rotation as well and the weekend rotation. That being said, I'm not worried about the pitching. But bunting, believe it or not, is actually kind of a concern just because it's happened several years in a row where it just seems like A&M cannot lay down a sacrifice bunt when the time calls for it. And also, too, I mentioned the pinching, but Corbin Martin getting hit as hard as he is, that is a little concerning, I guess. Like I said, he pitched great last night. He didn't give up any runs, but he was kind of tiptoeing around danger quite a bit. I imagine he'll get straightened out pretty soon. He might just need to – again, these guys are rusty. It's the beginning of the year, so maybe they're just trying to jump back in it and kind of polish themselves up a little bit.
Sure. A few other little bullet points of note. Nick Chorby is just on fire at the plate. 10 for 16 at the the plate this year
with a home run.
With a home run, first home career home run. You also have we thought here that we might have created something dastardly and evil, and that might be like the jinx of the podcast.
The podcast
because right
jinx.
After we interviewed DJ Hogue, he's out for the season. A&M, you know, a basketball guard forward. We interviewed Keely Milligan. She kind of got out to a little bit of a slow start. I think she's kind of leveled things out now. So we were kind of worried that there might be a little podcast jinx going on here. But that is not the case because you have George Yancha, who we interviewed here, last week?
Yep.
And he has already blazed out to hitting four triples in four games.
He had a long shot last night. They got over the right fielder, who had a cannon, by the way. The right fielder for SFA had a gun, and George was able to leg out a triple. So, yeah, and playing pretty good defense at third base. He had one play last night that they ruled an E5 that was going to be a really tough play no matter what. It was one that he had to backhand as he was going into foul territory and then had to throw from his back foot and had to make a long throw, and it bounced and got past Joel Davis at first base. But other than that, been playing a very solid third.
Sure, and then the other thing of note is not only looking at some of the slugging percentages, which you can assume with all those extra base hits are pretty good, but on-base percentages are really good. I mean, you look at Jorge Gutierrez, .833 on-base percentage. I mean, and I think it's easy to see that because he's really only gotten out, I think, twice. He is 5'7".
And Jorge is quickly becoming a fan favorite.
Yes. As you can imagine. Well, chicks dig the long ball. Everybody digs a long ball.
Here's the interesting, you know, there's Section 203, I believe, over there, the famous Section 203 at Olson Students. Field that lots of rowdy people, that's where most of the chants and everything comes from. They have kind of a lot of times a chant for every one of the, you know, you have Joel Davis when he comes up with his Chance the Rapper spiritual song with the angels in the outfield, angel wing kind of thing they do. And I remember this from last year. They have a hip hip Jorge chant for George Yancha because he is George.
Mm-hmm.
So when he comes to the back, they're
actually
all chanting
Ignatius.
Hip, hip, right.
His real name's
they
Ignatius.
They have a hip hip Jorge chant. Well, following George Yancha last night was actually Jorge, whose Twitter handle, I believe, is at hip hip Jorge.
Really?
Yeah, so they might need to work something out there.
Yeah, they're going to come out with some kind of chant for Jorge.
Because
they got to.
That is that's a little bit, that's kind of a little like a conflict of interest or something there. I don't know quite what to do with that.
And to peel back the curtain here, you took exception.
Pill, P-I-L-L?
Yeah. What? You took exception with an extra innings, every half inning, A&M singing the war hymn. All the students in extra innings, because typically they'll sing it, I believe, in the eighth, right?
No,
eighth.
Middle of the night. Or, well,
it's the middle of the eighth.
It's whatever they assume would be the last half inning.
Okay.
That's what I've
heard. And then they sing it every, basically before A&M comes to bat in extras, they sing it. And you were sitting there, and you were going, are they going to sing it every single time before A&M comes up
and
to the plate?
They did.
Coming from a TCU guy, when you got the Ric Flairs in the stands... The Woo Birds.
Oh, jeez.
Woo! 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 Those guys. And then you say that is upsetting? That annoys you, sir?
I'm
just giving you a hard time.
Yeah.
But, that being said, you did kind of say it with a look of disgust and disdain on your face. You were like, are they going to sing it every single time?
Again,
by this time of the night, you were craving some M&Ms. You were grumpy. It was late. We were in extra innings, and there was a pitching change every, I don't know, two pitches. So I understand the grumpiness.
No, I was not annoyed. I was just...
As an Aggie, I can say that there are some weird things that we do that I kind of look at it and say, WTF, bruh.
Well, you know, Zach, I think that's all the time we have for this segment. But coming up next on the My Aggie Nation podcast, we'll talk to Braden Shoemake, that star freshman second baseman, that's that rising star second baseman for the Fighting Texas Aggie baseball team. That's next on the My Aggie Nation podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. Again, Zach Taylor alongside Travis Brown. Joining us today is our all-baseball edition, by the way, Braden Shoemake. He's the freshman second baseman for the Aggies. Scored the winning run last night. Braden, actually, believe it or not, I was a little surprised. You're a tall guy. You're pretty fast, though. I mean, you got pretty good wheels, and you showed that off, that intentional walk, wild pitch, walk-off win, I guess. Is that what we're calling it now?
Yeah.
Something like that. But you were boogieing down the line pretty good.
Yeah, that was crazy. That was something new, something different. You don't see that every day. But, yeah, we've been working on trying to get a little wheels on me.
Now, I know you played third base in high school, but playing second base, how's the adjustment been to that? And, again, I mentioned you're what, 6'3", 6'4"? So you're tall for a second baseman. Normally you got to get those shorter guys like me or Travis to play that spot.
It's not been too bad at all. Homan has been a big help. George has been a big help. Really just working on double plays has been the hardest thing because straight up fielding ground balls is pretty much the same across the board. Working on footwork and working on the turns and throws and that kind of stuff is the biggest difference for sure.
Yeah, because that turn, a 4.63, especially kind of back in the hole, that's unlike really any other kind of play that you'll make in baseball, pivoting to make that throw to second.
Yeah, no, it's definitely different. It's tough. It's tough not to get your arm away from your body and let one sail on you. You got to just make sure you stay nice and compact and make that throw or shortstop.
Definitely. Well, you know, the thing that stood out to me last night, I don't know if you got to follow much of the news yesterday, but MLB does away with the four-pitch intentional walk, you can just kind of put a guy on from the dugout. But yesterday, y'all won because there's a wild pitch on an intentional walk. What is that? Is that kind of a little special wrinkle to you in baseball history to be on that same day? And what values do you think that the four pitch walk has or doesn't have?
Yeah, that's special. It's definitely it's interesting. We were watching MLB Network this morning, and they actually showed it on there. So that was one, pretty cool, and two, pretty interesting to listen to him talk about it. I think we should it should stay how it is. Like you said, we scored a run on it, the game-winning run on it. It just puts more pressure. Baseball's a pressure game. You put more pressure on the pitcher to not only throw strikes, but to throw it out of the zone and not bounce it or throw it over somebody's head so a free run doesn't score. It's just, like I said, it's a mind game. I like the four pitches personally as a hitter. I don't want to walk up there and just drop the bat and go, make him throw his four pitches out. And if he leaves one over the zone for some reason, you can hit that as well. So I like the four pitches, but they're not asking me.
Sure. So you and a bunch of the freshmen that are on this team, you think that there might be a little bit of an adjustment period getting used to college ball, but it seems like out of the gate, y'all are really having a lot of success. Is there something about the college game so far that has been a little bit of an adjustment that maybe just fans aren't seeing because y'all have been so successful?
Yeah, well, what the fans don't get to see is all the behind-the-scenes work, the stuff that the coaches have helped us with, the stuff in the fall, the scrimmages in the spring. There was adjustment period then, but I feel like facing the arms that we have here, you can get real adjusted real quick because we have unbelievable arms here. So being able to see them all fall and all spring will get you ready to see anybody.
As a number three hole guy, I mean, coming in as a freshman automatically asked to play that three hole, I know you've gotten adjusted, as you talked about, throughout the fall and scrimmages and things like that. There's still a lot of pressure on you, though. How do you deal with that? How's it been so far?
Yeah, no, there's some pressure there, but Coach Bolt always talks about readiness to hit's got to be at a 10 out of 10, and then you got to be at a 3 out of 10 and about with your emotions. You got to be calm but still have a little bit of eagerness about you, still a little chip on your shoulder ready to hit. Because if you're way too eager, way too anxious, it's not gonna. You're gonna roll over, do something that you're not. You're gonna get away from your swing.
Yeah.
So he's been a huge help with that.
You mentioned chip on your shoulder. With how many guys that this program lost last year? I think six of the top nine hitters last year. Is there a little bit of chip on the shoulder with the freshman class, the incoming guys, or even the team as the whole? That this team is capable to fill those quote unquote holes that were left?
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't say that there's just a chip on the freshman's shoulder. I say there's a chip on everybody's shoulder. Everybody has something to prove. Everybody wants to be the guy. So when everybody gets their opportunity, we're making the most of it right now. We just got to keep rolling on that wave.
Yeah.
You were pretty highly touted out of Wiley East. What made you decide to come to A&M?
I went down to a pre-draft workout and did all that stuff, but I really wanted to come to the best place in the country, in my opinion. Get some of the best strength work from Coach Mack, some of the best coaching from Coach Bolt, some of the best defensive work, everything. I just felt like that would make my game better as a whole.
Do you have any Aggies in your family or anything? Anybody kind of push you this way?
See, neither one of my parents came here, but on my dad's side, about half of them went here and the other half went to Texas.
Yeah,
so
that's usually how it is.
So it was split down the middle, but no, there was not too much push. He told me he'd be happy wherever I wanted to go, so we kept our options open.
Now I'll be the first to admit, I came here from Dallas about a year ago, and it was a little bit of a hard adjustment coming from big city life to College Station, trying to get adjusted here. How has that adjustment been for you? What's your favorite part of College Station so far?
Yeah, it has been a big difference. But then again, you get rush hour time here, and it's just the same.
Yeah,
there's people
really
everywhere.
True.
So, I love the atmosphere here. Everybody around the town. There's a buzz in this place on game days. There's a buzz in this place all the time. So I just love this. I love this town in general.
So I have to ask, moving a little bit on the team, it seems like this year more than last, you'll have some little pregame routines. What's the deal with the rosin bag?
No, they actually, I think they had that. They started that a few years ago, actually.
Okay.
They've been doing that for a little while, but we just pick out a manager or our trainer or somebody, and we have them try to throw the rosin bag onto the mound. It's just a little fun little fun game we have going on, try to keep everybody loose.
Right, and along the same vein, it seems like I noticed at the end of the war hymn before the game, there's a little hat toss. Is that new?
They did that on some a little bit last year, too. Okay. I mean, it's been going on for a little bit, but it's just a little fun, try to get to your hat before somebody else can type of deal.
Okay.
So that being said, you know, you guys, there's always going to be pranksters on the team, things like that. So who's the one on the team right now who likes to pull the most pranks on you guys?
Oh, Mitchell Kilkenny.
Okay.
He's a prankster.
Now, as a freshman, I highly doubt that you got any, you know, that the guys gave you a hard time or anything like that coming in, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Who was it? We had somebody, or Kaylor Chafin put tomatoes in somebody's back pocket one day, and they slid on them and didn't realize they were in there. So Kaylor will get some people, too. There's a lot of guys in there that are pranksters, though. It's a lot of fun.
And you played basketball and football. You were the quarterback for Wiley East. You were power forward for basketball. So overall, pretty athletic guy. I already talked about your speed. Who is the most athletic on the team? Would you say that's you?
Most athletic on the team?
Yeah.
I don't know. Nick Chorby's very athletic as well.
Yeah.
Kaylor Chafin can play him some basketball, too.
Really?
Yeah, that kid can play. Who else? Mason Cole's got a lot of bounce. So
he's tall.
Yeah, he's a big kid, too, yeah. And he's got some bounce. So you can throw it up, and he'll dunk it on somebody, too.
Was baseball always your first love, or is it that separate just because you kind of had some natural ability at it more so than the others?
No, I always wanted to play baseball. I never care to play basketball or football at the next level. It was always fun in high school, but I knew I wasn't going to try to continue to play afterwards. I'm not really sure if that was because my dad's a baseball coach or not, but I never really wanted to continue to play football or basketball.
Wiley East, pretty new program, pretty new school up there. Is that pretty cool to kind of be starting foundations of that
the
athletic program? Yeah, of the athletic program, and what did that kind of do for your athletic career, do you think?
Yeah, we had some guys come through there, I think 2 years before me, that were pretty good as well. Garrett McCain over at Oklahoma State plays baseball for them. He's a good player, too, so I got to play with him my freshman and sophomore years. But, yeah, being one of the first classes out of there is awesome. I mean, they're going to put stuff up about you all around that school the more successful you get down your career. But it's really cool looking back and knowing that you were one of the first classes to come through high school like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we lead into our next segment, we'll have to ask him, because our next segment, we're gonna get into some of the best college baseball parks, not only in Texas but around the country. And we'll have to take Bluebell Park out of the mix. You've probably seen a few college parks around the state and around the country. What is the most beautiful baseball park or couple of college baseball parks in the state or in the country?
I would say I'm just going to stay in our conference. I like Ole Miss,
okay,
South Carolina, and then old Alex Box down at LSU. Those are all real nice parks.
Gotcha.
Keeping with the SEC.
What started this is, being a Dallas guy, I'm sure you probably played a playoff game or two over at DBU.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty – it's a small park.
It's small,
but it's a pretty park with that backdrop.
A lot of games over there. Yeah, no, it is.
Definitely. That's all I got.
Thanks so much, man. Really do appreciate it. Braden Shoemake, Fighting Texas Aggie second baseman. Again, you can check him and the guys out this weekend. They're going to be hosting Pepperdine at Bluebell Park. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap this bad boy up for you. And you're listening to My Aggie Nation podcast.
Will you?
Welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast.
Speaking of woogie, that's kind of some woogie music.
Woogie woogie, Master Disorder. Little intro musica. Did I tell you I'm learning Spanish?
Yeah.
See?
See?
See? Muy bueno.
You're gonna move over to the Zone Deportes?
Yeah. The Zone Deportes, and I'll just speak Spanish. Actually, that's what we should do. I'll just do a whole podcast in Spanish.
Uh-huh.
I can't roll my R's, so it's going to make it a little awkward, but, you know, you get by with what you got. So.
Yeah.
Anyways, this has basically been the baseball podcast. I mean, we've been talking really nothing but baseball.
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
About Aggie baseball in the first segment, visited with Braden Shoemake.
Shoemake.
There was a guy who pitched for the Bombers a couple of seasons. His name was Andre Shoecraft. and Shoemake and Shoecraft, I'm going to get those confused all year long.
Shoemake is not S-H-O-E.
No.
It's S-H-E-W.
E-W. And his name was Shoecraft, S-H-E-W-C-R-A-F-T. So this, it's going to be a wild ride. Just stay tuned. But that being said, been talking a lot of baseball. Now we've gotten to one of my favorite things. Obviously, when you're talking about baseball, it's a beautiful game. It has lots of, I think a lot of it because you can really, for the parks and things like that, they can kind of bring on their own persona. Mm-hmm. Whereas basketball, you got a court. Football, you got 100 yards by whatever, 44 or whatever. With baseball, there's all sorts of crazy things you can do.
There's lots of adornments in baseball.
Right, exactly, stadium. Exactly.
In football, the best you got is the hedges and a lot of the SEC stadiums around.
But, I mean, no matter what, a football stadium more or less is built the exact same way, mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. But baseball can be a little bit more endearing as far as, and it can also be kind of a pain in the butt, too, for some teams. That being said, we were talking about some of our, favorite stadiums or stadiums that we think are the most pleasant to the eye.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned Pepperdine, which is in Malibu, California. Kind of hard to go wrong with that one. And you look out over left field fence and the Pacific Ocean is hanging out there. You got palm trees that line the outfield fence. It's kind of up on a cliff. And so it's a gorgeous place. A&M actually played there last year. And if you talk to Will Johnson, who was doing play-by-play for A&M on the radio, he was just talking about how great it was and how beautiful it was. You had mentioned a ballpark in the DFW area.
Yeah, this all kind of started out. I was scrolling through Twitter during that marathon baseball day last Saturday when there was a doubleheader out there at Olson Field at Bluebell Park. And the DBU baseball Twitter handle, posted just a little picture of the stadium from the press box, the field from the press box, and Dallas Baptist's baseball stadium might be, I think actually is probably the most beautiful college baseball park in the state of Texas.
It is very
in the state of Texas because it's the whole, first off, the whole campus is beautiful. It's kind of up on a hill in South Dallas. There is, it's very colonial. Very colonial. They are the Patriots. But the red brick stadium, pretty brand new, pretty intimate. You have nice turf. I don't really like the turf fields, but it looks good. And then over the outfield fence, there are, I accidentally said mountains to our friend Colin Beaver over at KX. There are no mountains
in
Dallas, right? There's a nice set of mounds, over the outfield.
Some big hills
with trees, very 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 natural kind of batter's eye back there. It's very pretty. The other cool thing is, following this whole kind of colonial patriot theme down the baselines, they have some boxes that just have rocking chairs. You can go down there, sit in a rocking chair, watch some baseball.
Down
the line. So, DBU, one of the prettier fields, one of the prettier stadiums in the state of Texas as far as baseball goes. I think if you take the stadium as a whole, as far as just kind of grandeur,
mm-hmm.
I mean, yes, Bluebell, Olson Field, Bluebell Park, is one of the better, one of the... most like a major league stadiums that I've seen as far as college
baseball.
If
only they
goes.
Didn't have that railing in front in the press box where you had to get up on the front of your seat in order to see over, because those that are vertically challenged like myself and you are having a hard time.
Yeah, that is kind of rough.
And also the windows open side to side as opposed to up and down, which if you're in the corners, you can't see through the windows.
Right, and what pushes DBU ahead of, because DBU is a much smaller stadium.
Yes.
What pushes DBU ahead of Bluebell in my mind is first off, what's beyond the outfield fence. And at A&M, you have just kind of like the awkward side of the rec center, which is kind of interesting. And then over the other side, the train is cool. The train is very cool. But beyond the train, it's just kind of Welburn and then the giant indoor barns for track and football.
Now, I will say about the rec, though, it looks a lot better since they completed the construction.
That is true.
And I imagine, I don't know if they'll bring Aggie Alley back over there. Used to, you'd have folks that would post up on their tailgates and kind of hang out over there. I don't know if they'll allow that again or if they plan on building any kind of seating that's beyond the outfield wall. But you're right. As far as a backdrop, the train is cool. The other stuff, nah, not so
much. If it would have just be Kyle Field, that would be pretty cool.
No, that would be cool.
If the barns weren't there.
And it used to be back before they built the barns.
Right. That was But that's not anymore. That's a pretty cool view. But that's what puts DBU ahead of Bluebell Park, just an overall aesthetics.
By the way, I cheated a little bit. I looked up the 20 collegiate baseball stadiums that you have to go to before you die.
Okay.
And Bluebell is not on there.
Ooh, what's that one?
Bluebell, that is Western Carolina University. That's Lennon Stadium in Cullowhee, North Carolina.
That's cool.
Which, if you... So Western Carolina played Texas A&M, I believe it was last season. And I looked up, because I didn't know where the heck Western Carolina was. It is a gorgeous campus, and the football field is gorgeous, too. It's got
it kind of looks like a baseball version of BYU's Lavelle Edwards, with mountains in the background that stadium did.
And I was looking up the football field, too. It's like part of it's made basically on the side of a mountain.
Yeah, and that looks a lot like Lavelle Edwards.
Yeah, yeah, but with trees.
Uh-huh.
And it's a gorgeous, gorgeous campus. Not a very good football team, but a really pretty campus.
Sure. Go back to that list there. We have...
go back to the list. We got Horner Ballpark, DBU.
Okay.
Of course, TD Ameritrade, which I don't think that doesn't count.
No, that doesn't count. Because that's just a... I have not been to TD Ameritrade yet, so I can't really... I'm really speaking out of turn here, but I was a big... big Rosenblatt purist.
Yeah.
I mean, Rosenblatt was a cool stadium.
Plus all the history and everything. Right.
And so when I get a chance to go back up to Omaha, which side note, I've covered, I've now covered multiple college bowl games. I've covered the Super Bowl. I've covered a lot of stuff. The College World Series is still the coolest sporting event I've ever been to. Just the coolest thing. So if you haven't been to the College World Series, you must go. Just the coolest thing. But I'm just not now. Okay,
Dish Falk is on here.
Why is Dish Falk?
Dish Falk is number 8 on this list.
The only
Dish Falk. Nothing homey about Dish Falk.
No, it's pretty
huge,
old.
And the turf and everything and the backdrop is. I mean, you got the softball field back there. I mean, that's
the only
just,
cool thing. I mean, if you want to talk about cool baseball-y things, the only and you seem to kind of say that this was like this before the rec center. Is all along the fences. They have people who have bought and converted like school buses and put party decks on top of them.
Which
and
is like Mississippi
standing,
State, which is really
okay,
cool.
Standing on top of the party decks right over the fence, and that's pretty cool. But Dish Falk might be one of the ugliest ballparks. And I know a lot of A&M fans will be happy about that hot sports take.
Yeah, considering you're coming from an unbiased opinion, being a TCU guy, even though it's not known as necessarily unbiased anymore. Because TCU plays Texas a lot. So
sure, but
maybe you're just a hater. Whatever, man.
Listen,
haters gonna hate.
I am unbiased. Any team can win.
Now I told you about their old stadium, which is now, I believe, the Intramurals stadium or whatever, or where they have it like the Intramural fields now, but it used to be the baseball stadium. There was actually
at
a
Texas?
Cliff. Yeah, there was a cliff in the middle of center field.
That's kinda cool.
And the wall went above the cliff. And the cliff was still in play, so guys could like run up and get balls and stuff. So that was pretty cool.
Now, I mean, speaking of just bringing, since you brought it up, I think one of the better backdrops in college baseball too is Lupton Field has those nice trees all the way around at in Fort Worth. They've done a lot to renovate and do a lot with that stadium. So the outside, it's kind of. Sunken into the sidewalk, and there's not a whole lot to the back or the outside of the stadium. But once you're inside, it's a nice little park.
Yeah. Now, what I really like, too, is I do like seeing scenery, mountains, trees, things like that. I also like those kind of downtown ballparks. Reckling Park for Rice. Have you ever gotten to go see a game there?
Oh, I played it there.
Gorgeous stadium.
Uh-huh.
Gorgeous stadium. Because you're sitting there, and when A&M played in the regional down there a couple of years ago, and you're just sitting there, and you look beyond, and there's downtown Houston. It pretty cool. Pretty cool backdrop. And at Georgia Tech in Atlanta, it's also like that. So is the football stadium. With
cool thing about Reckling Park. So I was in part of the 2007 Houston Regional that year. An underrated cool part about that, but the dugouts, there's like five dugout steps.
Jeez.
To get up there, to get up the field. And that's kind of cool. I mean, it's
that's
like
a lot of work,
like,
though.
Well, yeah, kind of, but you can get down. If you're down on the benches, you're really down in the dugout.
And you can't see anything.
You can see, I mean, as long as there's not someone standing in front of you.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I mean, you can kind of get, you know, if you're a pitcher, you kind of want to get away from everything a little bit, take a breath. You can go down into there and sit down on the bench and kind of get away from the game a second, or you can be up on the fence and watching the action. So that's kind of a cool little aspect to that part.
By the way, I didn't mention Cal State Fullerton is on this list. UCLA is on this list. No Pepperdine. Which I find amazing, because Pepperdine has got a gorgeous, gorgeous baseball field, and I would play there 10
out
of 10.
They also had – I'm a little bit skeptical of that list, because they also had Louisville on there, which that looks like a high school stadium.
If you got nothing but artificial turf all over your field, I am not going to like you.
No.
I'm sorry.
No.
Natural grass or GTFO. And
yes.
So Dishwalk Field now is all
yeah
turf.
Pepperdine is a cool stadium.
Yeah, you got palm trees all out there, you got the ocean breeze blowing in, it's gorgeous. But yeah, I don't understand why, other than Texas being a great program, an historic program, that's the only thing I can think of why Dishwalk.
It kind of looks like this. What is this list from?
This, like,
what's the website?
Oh, the time Odyssey Online?
Oh, yeah.
I have no idea.
It kind of looks like they just ran through.
South Carolina, by the way, is number one, which I would love to go there. They have a great, great baseball.
It kind of looks like they're just running through something like the top 25.
Yeah. Alex Box is on there. That's another stadium I really want to go to.
Where's that?
That's LSU.
Okay.
Baton Rouge. I really want to go to Alex Box. But the other ones, I just don't. And by the way, this other one, this is statescout.com. They swap those two. Alex Box is number one, followed by South Carolina. Mississippi State is number three. Again, you got all the trucks out in the outfield that people pimp out, which would be really cool. I really want to go see that. Virginia Tech, number four. Liberty, apparently, has a pretty nice stadium.
Hmm.
They're number five on this. Arkansas is number six.
Arkansas has a cool stadium. I've seen Arkansas Stadium. Arkansas is kind of like a, it seems, it's kind of a mini Bluebell Park. It kind of looks like that. It's a little bit smaller as far as the facade of the stadium. But it's a very cool park. Dishwalk is on this one, too.
This is number 15 at Dishwalk. East Carolina.
There's Bluebell.
Bluebell is 18. Reckling Park is 19. Louisiana Lafayette apparently has a pretty nice one. Now, Tennessee.
Now, Louisiana Lafayette, I can't say anything about their baseball stadium, but their softball stadium is impressive.
Is it?
Yes. And that's their softball stadium.
Was the baseball stadium not like around there?
No, not within.
Now another place I like Tennessee's, because you've got those hills that are out beyond the outfield fence. So again, I like a little backdrop to it. Look at this.
This is going to be really. We're talking about baseball parks in Texas. Look this one up, because this one is going to be interesting. But it's always stuck in my mind. Look up Mountain View College in
Mountain
Dallas.
View.
It's a community college. So, I mean, the back, you know, the stands and everything are not. But kind of talking about like what you were talking about, Texas, there is a cliff out in center field. And I don't know if we'll be able to see any pictures of their stadium, but there's kind of a cliff with some trees and stuff out in center field of the park. And
it's not in play, though, right?
No, it's not in play, but it's a very cool little batter's eye. Is that it right
no,
there?
That's no. Southern Idaho. I'm having a hard time. Mountain View?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be really obscure.
That's not it.
That's
BYU. BYU's got a really cool stadium.
Yeah, oh, yeah, there's a mountain in the background.
Yeah,
and
big old
like
mountain
that.
And some trees. Yeah, I'm having a hard time.
Sure,
time
well,
placing this.
You know, and the other thing that has to be at least a mention that we were talking about a second ago is you got Baylor's ballpark that's right there on the Brazos. If you, I believe, over the it'd be over the left field wall is the river.
I have no idea. I've never been.
The river. I wonder if they have the boats out there now, like they do for the football games.
I don't know.
For the baseball games.
It's actually a cool idea. I wouldn't want to get in that water.
That is Baylor Ballpark, I think, isn't it? That's the...
I don't know.
The name of the stadium.
But looking at the grandstand and things like that, you can see the picture. I'm not seeing where the river runs. Oh.
Right there.
Right
here.
Oh,
it's over right field.
Yeah, it's past the right field wall.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a dangerous place to put it if you want to avoid getting flooded. But that being said, I'm sure they've taken that into consideration.
The banks are raised pretty high.
Yeah. So, anyways, for college ballparks, there's still a lot to see, obviously, that I would love to go to some, especially some of these SEC ones. Like I said, I would like to go to Stark Vegas and go check out their stadium there. Ole Miss, I'd like to go see that. Alex Box, I'd really like to go there.
Give me for grins, this is one that I almost got a chance to see. Look up UNLV.
UNLV.
Yeah, I think that'll be interesting to see what...
Have you been there?
No, I almost got a chance to, but didn't get to. I didn't know if there was any kind of cool backdrop to that stadium.
Vegas.
Yeah.
You got Vegas going on in the background and some trees.
Yeah, it's not bad.
I mean, it's not a bad stadium.
No. Kind of looks like a little minor league park.
I don't think that's UNLV's. I think that's Clemson's stadium right there that we're taking a look at. But by the way, we're Googling all of these. So that's definitely something. That's actually on my bucket list, is to go see all the major league parks.
Go through
and
all of them.
Yeah, I'm saving Oakland for last, so they tear that dump down and they finally build a nice new stadium. So I'm saving that one for last.
O.co.
Actually, if you look over here, you will see where I have souvenirs from every ballpark that I've gone to.
Oh, I didn't realize that's what that was.
Every ballpark that I go to, I get an ice cream and the little souvenir helmet, and I save the helmet.
There you go.
Because I don't have enough money to buy bobbleheads.
Well, we'll close out this segment with the looking back at Bluebell Park. Back in 2007, got a chance to come up here and play a little bit, and it was a much different stadium, for sure. You have the metal bleachers down where the berms are, and all that mess. But the funniest, the best part is that, and I know we encountered this the other day on Saturday during the night game, is the bats. Because when we walked
into that
visitor's locker room at Olsen Field, I guess it was just Olsen Field at that point,
yeah,
there was dead bats everywhere in the visitors clubhouse.
Really?
In all of the lockers.
Oh, man.
And all, we didn't even really use the locker room because there were so many dead bats. We just took all of our gear into the dugout and went down there. But it was there were bats everywhere. So I'm sure that they've probably cleaned up the bat issue as much as they can with the new digs. But there was some bats flying around.
Yeah, and there were a couple that were eating, hanging out, and flying in and out. We thought they were going to come up in the press box with us, but luckily they didn't. Yeah. So we're just kind of sitting there watching them. But A&M apparently has had like a real-time bat problem, because whenever Kyle Field was under renovation, a lot of bats had nested and were roosting in Kyle, and apparently that upset them as well. So hopefully we avoid the bat uprising of 2017. Where they're coming, and they're coming for blood.
Or the A&M baseball team might want the bat uprising.
Oh, like the rally possum. You get the rally bat.
Well, there you go. Well, that's all the time we have today for this edition of the My Aggie Nation podcast. The baseball edition of the My Aggie Nation podcast, as baseball season gets fired up for Texas A&M. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We will be back next week, I'm sure, with much more updates on baseball, basketball, softball. It's a busy time for that athletic department here in Aggieland. So, that being said, for Zach Taylor, I am Travis Brown. This is the My Aggie Nation podcast, and we'll see you next week.
It seems like every day, everything just has a way to must have it seems. But if we don't watch what we're doing, our hearts will get ruined by our silly things. Good love ain't needs a girl, we know that's true. If we wanna keep it, we gotta watch everything that we do, yeah, yeah. I wanna make sure my baby, make sure you're sticking with me. I wanna make sure that we'll be all that we can be. All that